I got people looking at me to see if I really do say that. Well, you know, if you're going to ask that kind of stupid question, obviously if God's God, you say something like that to him, he's going to kill you. So you obviously have to be in a state of mind where you don't think he's there. What difference does it make what you say? I mean, if you're going to say it, don't mince around. I mean, don't say, "Holy Jehovah, where in the hell are you?" I mean, really lay one on him. You miserable, cross-eyed offspring of an orangutan. Big mouth, unable to do anything you say. Miserable excuse for a god, a stick, and a tree is better than you. You really unwind, why don't you? Almost scares you to hear me. Just sort of play this role. It shows how stupid we are, is what I'm trying to demonstrate. You got to really be partially insane. Now, I've never said anything quite that bad. But I've said some things that I'm really glad God in his mercy has shown. He's forgiven others too. But my point is well taken. If you're going to say, "Where's God?" If he is God, any of you ever see King of Hearts, the movie King of Hearts? Did they have the little thing in front of it about Bambi and Godzilla? You saw it? You see this little Bambi out there eating grass, wiggling his tail? And then you see Godzilla. And then you see a foot big as the whole screen that makes Bambi look like a toenail on the foot. Bam! And Bambi's no more. Too hot in here. You got my point? I mean, why trifle with God? You're going to say something as stupid as, "Where is God?" which is denying him, his promise of his presence. Why don't you just really let go? Huh? Because it's scary. Well, then why tread on the area at all? You got the point. They tempted the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" And water gushed from the rock. Whoopee! Party begins. God's tricky. Then, when? Just when I start enjoying myself. Playing Amazing Grace. Then, at that point of victory, I told you. God really needs a good telling off. I wouldn't treat a dog that way. Just, do you know how long it takes 3.5 million people to take a bath in that water? And all they get is a drink then. They haven't even got time to warm it up and get the, what's that stuff you put in that gets all the white bubblies? Huh? Huh? Bubble bath. I mean, marching from the wilderness of sin. I'm so dirty and smelly, I've been sleeping outside the tent. And the water just poured. What a night we're going to have tonight. We're going to help that promised Abraham along. Not only are we going to the promised land, supposed to be as many there when we get there, stars in heaven, sand in the... Look at all this sand. Woman, take a bath. No time to... I've never been able to enjoy a single victory God's ever given me. That's why I say all the time, he's never on time. We hardly got into secret one. Why couldn't we enjoy that for about 3 years? That's divine manifestation. For 4 years, that covers the whole earth. God had a lick of brains. He would have given the current test to us in 1989. He needed somebody else to write his scripts. Just when the water flowed, man. I go over to Craig Lamp and I say, "Did you see what God did?" And he says, "Did you see what I see coming over the hill?" Exactly at that point, then. I'm warning you. Then came Amalek. And fought with Israel. Where? In Rephidim. God's got the strangest name for drought and war. He's got a very limited vocabulary. Annie. At times I don't think he knows what he's doing. When this war is over, I've said, when this war is over, God, we're going to sit down and get our language straightened out. Then came, you know what Amalek means? Warlike. Then came those whose life was war. They lived to kill and fight and destroy. And fought with Israel and Rephidim. Well, if God told me it's an open door of war, I wouldn't have gone to it. He's tricky. You haven't even got time to fill my canteens. I warn you. Well, now, I warn you. Why does God work this way? I could believe him and have confidence in him and just take a swim at Rephidim. In fact, if you keep that water flowing, I could build a little desert getaway here. I like Rephidim now. Water's flowing. I go to the rock. And drink. Now, that probably turned some people on that just tuned in. Now, how do I catch them up? People just joined us. How do I catch them up? We'll be all night if I try to catch them up. Then came Amalek, warriors, and fought with Israel in Rephidim. Rephidim means place of rest. Why did God do that? I'm in Exodus chapter 17. Now what? When, you remember what I said? I said to Craig Lamp, "Did you see what just happened to that rock?" And he said, "Did you see what I see coming over the hill? Amalek. Killers." "Well, nothing." I said, "Craig, nothing to that. God did what he said to Abram, didn't he? gave him a kid when he's too old to have one. God did what he said to Abraham, didn't he? He sent him down to a land they were strangers in. He made it harder for himself than first glance would appear. He made them rulers, which in essence made it harder to do what he said he'd do, cause them to be slaves. Sure enough, became slaves. Exactly in the fourth generation, he brought them out, just like he said he would, didn't he? With miracles that so got the Egyptians on the ropes, they loaned their jewelry to them, gold and silver. So they came out richer than they went in. Isn't that what God said with him? Brought them to the Red Sea, parted the Red Sea and killed Egyptians. Two birds, one stone. Took them 3 days into the wilderness, sweetened the water. In spite of their murmuring, undeserving though they may be. They weren't praying, they were murmuring. He sweetened the water. Led them in the wilderness, and they hungered. They murmured. God rained food from heaven. Boy, a God like that can do anything, can he? And said, now I want you to go to Rephidim, a place of rest. Well, God had no do that. Because when I get to Rephidim, there's no water there. Doesn't look like God can do what he said. Blackboard of performance erased. You see, what we do with God is we start all over from scratch, every temptation. No carryover. God's got to show off just exactly from scratch. Otherwise, we won't believe him. So God has Moses strike the rock, and water pours from the rock. How much does it take to prove God's leading on your life? How many terrorizing circumstances must he take us through in this walk of faith? Here comes Amalek. Before we say, let me at him. Before we say, another opportunity for God to reveal his hand. Well, the Red Sea was easy. The sweetened waters at Marah was easy. Kerplunk. Tree falls in water, and that's it, sweet. The food problem, simple. Manna from heaven. Water at Rephidim's, simple. Whack, gurgle, 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 gurgle. But now God's going to tighten the screw a little. This time doesn't come quite as easy. Moses said to Joshua, choose us out men, go out and fight with Amalek. You mean now I got to do something besides murmur? Go out and fight with Amalek tomorrow. Boy, I got to sleep on that one. All night long, bad dreams. You see how God intensified it a bit? No more stand still and see the salvation of the Lord. No more Moses, go hit the rock, you know, manna fall. You and you and you, you're volunteers. Tomorrow we go fight Amalek. Just when the water was pouring and God's deliverance was so secure. So Joshua did as Moses had said to him, fought with Amalek. Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. It came to pass when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed. When he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. But Moses' hands were heavy. Didn't come as easy this time, did it? And they took him a stone and put it under him, and he sat thereon. And Aaron and Hur stayed up his hands, the one on the one side, the other on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. And Joshua discomfited Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Now it suddenly becomes a group action. People in the valley get killed if Moses' hands go down. Moses' hands go down because they're heavy, unless Aaron and Hur run up the hill and hold his hand. Boy, this is a symphony of activity. Well, Aaron and Hur may have said, this stone's too heavy and the hill's too steep. I'd just soon sit and watch. Moses' hands drop. Joshua and the army's killed in the valley, and when the Amalekites would get through, everybody's going to get killed. I just don't believe I want to participate. Joshua chose the men, and it was fight, man. Fight though they may, they were whipped. If Moses' hands didn't stay up, and Moses' hands got heavy, he couldn't hold them up. Aaron Hur went up the hill and held them up. And when all did their part, victory came. Now Joshua is destined down the road in God's plan to lead him into this promised land. You got that? Joshua, many years later, is going to lead him into the promised land. And the Lord said unto Moses, when this battle was over, write this for a memorial in a book and rehearse it in the ears of who? Joshua. For I will utterly put out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. The Lord is my banner. Now we have a national anthem. Oh, say, can you see? And as long as that banner was there, the songwriter knew the battle was not lost. The Lord is our banner, not a tattered flag, but the Lord omnipotent who arranged the course of four centuries of history to carry his word out in the finishing of his word, which was to bring them back to the place where he gave the promise to Abram, had parted the Red Sea, had sweetened the water, had given bread from heaven, had turned a rock into a fountain, and had given them victory over the Amalekites. Now, at some point, you realize the Lord is the banner, and we made it. Right? And Moses built an altar and called the name of it Jehovah Nissi. For he said, because the Lord has sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation. Recite it to Joshua. The wars aren't going to stop. But victory is coming. Victory is ours. You ought to read Deuteronomy 25. Verses 17 and 18. No prophecy of scriptures of private interpretation. Amalek's still around, from generation to generation. Verse 17. Remember what Amalek did unto thee, Moses is saying to him now. By the way, when ye were come forth out of Egypt, how he met thee by the way and smote the hindmost of thee, even all that were feeble behind thee, when thou wast faint and weary. And he feared not God. Come back to Exodus 17. The little PS is, you better not lag behind. You better not faint. You better not give in to weariness. Them's the ones that Amalek gets. There's only one way to go in this walk. Charge. Hebrews, and I'm done for the time being. New Testament. Chapter 3. I've been on this when I could grab some time for the last week. Verse 7. Wherefore, as the Holy Ghost saith, today if you will hear his voice, harden not your hearts as in the provocation and the day of temptation in the wilderness, when your fathers tempted me. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, they do always err in their heart. They have not known my ways. So I swear in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, but exhort one another daily. I was on this the other night, while it's called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence. That word confidence is a terrible translation. It's hypostasis or hypostasis. The Greek word translated substance that you find in Hebrews chapter 11. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. We've got to hold our substance, which faith is, steadfast unto the end. While it is said today, if you'll hear his voice, harden not your hearts, as in the provocation. For some, when they had heard, did provoke. Howbeit, not all that came out of Egypt were Moses, because we know Joshua and Caleb, and maybe a few others, but those are the ones we know about, had faith, and when they saw the giants at a later stopping point, they weren't intimidated by them. But those that provoked, with whom he was grieved 40 years, was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness, and to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest, but to them that believed not? So we see they couldn't enter in because of unbelief. Therefore, or let us therefore fear, lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. For unto us was the gospel preached, as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it. I told you several hours ago. You may think that you can sit there as an onlooker while a few of us carry this load. Uh-uh. You never know which day it'll be that God says enough. See, that's the risk. There is a certain point, like on a line along a continuum, where God's performance... Now, he told Moses to write it in the book and rehearse it for Joshua. Well, it's in the book, and I just rehearsed it for you. There is a point where God gets fed up with this tendency to err in our heart, a perverse side of our nature, that every new Rephidim that doesn't look like Rephidim, we complain. And there is at a point. God will say, okay. And as I said earlier, the early chapter of Romans is not what the traditional Christians exclusively apply it to. They worship the creature instead of the Creator. And God gets enough. And they believe a lie and are damned. God turns them over to a strong delusion. We are citizens of a heavenly kingdom, children of a heavenly Father, pilgrims and strangers down here. And Peter says, act like it. Now, there is a point where this house of faith, for whom God has shown his hand so often, we've been facing annihilation for 11 years. And every single time, sometimes in the midnight hour,
God has been there on time to deliver when we're acting in faith. Now, there is a point where God will not put up with your inaction any longer. He'll turn you over to strong delusion. You'll believe a lie and be damned. And you'll worship the creature, yourself and your needs, instead of God eternal. Where is the Christianity that marched to lions, singing songs of joy, that turned the Roman Empire upside down? Now, we got a task before us. We'll accomplish that task. This ministry is not going to die. God forgive me for the times I thought it would. And I suppose, do it again, but I hope not. Somewhere we need to reach the stage that we see these testings as opportunity for God to show the power of His deliverance. And for faithers like that, God gives everything. That's what He's trying to bring forth in us. And unless He puts us confronting the test, the opportunity to let faith overpower fear is not in front of us. Now, some of you, as with every test, are going to stay there inactive, and God may turn off on you. Can the rest of us get up and fight till we know we've won? We've faced worse tests than this. Well, if we haven't, we've faced previous tests without as much proof behind us in the record of God's delivering power. How many of you, I've said this many times, how many of you thought you wouldn't make it at some time in your life? Are there exceptions to that rule? How many of you thought you could make it? There were times you thought you wouldn't make it. Let me see your hand. Put them up. Nothing ever scared you.
This is the end of side three. Or for side four. Thank you.